Aftermath by Jeff Bagwell. Read by Matthew Lloyd Davis. Smith eased the door closed behind him, careful not to wake Elizabeth and the baby. After another bad night, they were finally asleep, and the longer they stayed that way, the better. These days, sleep was the only refuge from the nightmare. Outside on the pavement, he stopped. The street was deserted. Over his shoulder hung the rifle he'd found last year, next to the body of a dead soldier. The empty street, together with the rifle, made him feel, well, maybe not safe, but safer. Feeling safe was a luxury of another age, like the assumption that the flashpoints of the world's bloodiest conflict would only ever be seen on a television screen. These things were gone forever, since the brief respite between the Cold War's end and the Holy War's beginning had turned out to be just that, a respite. But the winter had been long and many had died. Of the survivors, most were sick and weak. And in the land of the frail, Smith thought, even a 30-year-old accountant can survive. And he had to. They had a baby. He scanned the row of Victorian terraced houses. He thought he saw a movement in a window and frowned. He stared, concentrating on the lace-net curtains, assessing the risk. His finger crept towards the trigger of the rifle and rested there. Nothing. Just his imagination. Slowly he took his finger from the trigger guard and allowed the tension to ease from his shoulders. He began to walk. A casual glance in the street appeared as it had when they moved in. Typical London terraced housing a mile south of the Thames. Built for the poor of the 19th century, inhabited by the wealthy of the 21st. Except it wasn't the same. According to Smith's watch, analog, of course, now semiconductor and quartz-based devices no longer worked. It was 11:10 in the morning, yet a dusty grey haze hung in the air. The twilight which now passed for daylight, and in another 2 hours darkness would begin closing in, until a starless night smothered everything by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Smith walked on, past front gardens where shriveled flowers had fought to root then failed to bloom. Past trees either diseased, dead, or dying, and past animals skulking in shadows. Most of these were pets, or their mutant offspring. Cats and dogs who were nowadays more likely to be food than fed. Left to fight for survival amongst the rats and other vermin, they stood little chance, their hunting genes lost to domestication. Smith reached Costcutter. After a quick glance over his shoulder, he went inside. Sanjeev had been sitting on a stool behind the counter. Now he stood, his right hand instinctively resting on the AK-47 hanging across his body.
"Brian, my friend, how's it going?"
Apart from Elizabeth, Sanjeev was the only person who spoke to him like this. Civility and manners were a waste of energy better conserved for the effort of staying alive.
"How are Elizabeth and the baby?"
"They're fine."
Sanjeev kept smiling, but his eyes held only pity. These were not the days to start a family.
"So what do you need?"
Smith glanced around. The store was small, little more than a newsagent, but it had once sold all the essential groceries. Now its shelves were hopelessly barren. He turned back to Sanjeev. "What have you got?" The smile faded and died.
"Wait."
Sanjeev went through a door behind the counter. When he returned, he held a cardboard box. He placed it on the counter and picked items from it one at a time.
Nappies, 1 pack. Wipes, 2 packs. Baby food, 4 jars.
"That's it," Smith said. Sanjeev shrugged apologetically.
"That's it."
Smith thrust his hand in his jacket and pulled out a fistful of currency. Elizabeth's wedding ring, a gold chain which had belonged to her mother, a pair of gold earrings, other stuff he hadn't even wanted to look at. "Is it enough?" he asked. Sanjeev nodded. "I'm sorry," he said as he took them. "Yeah," Smith said. "We all are." The house was quiet when he got back. Elizabeth and the baby were still asleep. He trod softly along the hall, then slowly climbed the stairs. In the bedroom, he stood beside the bed. Thin grey light crept in around the curtains. Mother and baby lay face to face, and even in sleep, Smith saw the anxious lines creasing Elizabeth's forehead. Then he shifted his gaze to the daughter he himself had delivered 3 months ago. Lying on her side, her profile was one of delicate perfection. The graceful upturned nose, the tiny ear like exquisitely carved mother of pearl, the kiss of lips, the gentle swell of her cheek. Something hard knotted in Smith's throat, and though agnostic in belief, he suddenly understood how many could only attribute such beauty to a benign creator. Then she moved. Slowly she settled onto her back. And now Smith saw the other head. It sprouted from the crook of her neck, puffy and bulbous with empty eye sockets and twisted features. Its skin was translucent like an overinflated balloon, and just below the surface a network of veins throbbed and pulsed, mocking Smith's hope that it would shrivel up and die. He turned away. He swallowed before the lump in his throat could become the sob he felt rising up from his guts. "Don't wake them. Sleep is the only escape." And then the other thought came, as it so often did. The nuclear winter was bad, but it will be nothing as to the nuclear spring.